Welcome to Sarah's Bookshelves Live. I'm Sarah of the blog Sarah's Bookshelves. Each week, I'm talking with one bookish guest about two old books they love, two new books they love, one book they don't love, and one new release they're excited about. We're going to get real and sometimes a little bit snarky about all things books. This is a brand new podcast, so if you like it, I'd really love your support. Please spread the word to your reader friends, subscribe to the show, and rate and review it wherever you listen to podcasts. Let's get rolling. Hey, everyone. I always get especially excited when I get to talk to fellow bookish podcasters on the show. I've only done it once so far. This is going to be my second go-round. And I'm thrilled to have Meredith Monday Schwartz and Katie Cobb, co-hosts of the Currently Reading podcast, joining me today. Meredith is the full-time CEO of a wedding website, while Katie is a stay-at-home homeschooling mom, which, by the way, I do not count as being a stay-at-home mom because more I should basically just say you're a teacher. And both of these ladies have four kiddos each. And Katie, in particular, it might be best known for listening to audiobooks on 2 to 2.5 speed, which is a whole nother thing. Welcome, Katie and Meredith.
Hi, Sarah. Thanks for having us.
Thank you so much. We love to talk books.
Well, I'm so glad y'all are here. And Currently Reading holds a special place in my heart because when you launched the podcast in, what was it, September of 2018?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I joined you maybe 10 episodes in, something like that. But I was in the process of working through the plans for my podcast. So I would listen to you all and I would think about the things I loved that you did. And so I guess what I should be doing is thanking you for giving me a lot of tips before I started my own thing.
Oh, absolutely. We've loved your show from the very beginning. It almost felt like your show was completely fully formed the moment that the very first episodes dropped. It just was this exactly right kind of format right from the start. So yeah, we love it. It immediately went into my every single week playlist.
Totally.
Oh, well, thank you so much. And I will tell you that it was months getting there. It was definitely not the first plan that I came up with.
That's interesting. That's an episode that you should do, like what it could have been.
Oh, yeah. I thought today we would talk a little bit about behind the scenes of Currently Reading.
Mm-hmm.
So for my listeners who have not listened to your podcast, can you give everyone a quick overview of what they can expect from you every week?
Absolutely. So we always start out every episode with our bookish moment of the week. And so it's usually just a little something that throughout the week delighted us in some bookish way. Then we talk about our current reads. So whatever we've read in the, you know, in the past week or the past little bit, we definitely have strong opinions. So unlike a lot of book podcasts, I think one thing that makes Currently Reading different is that we talk about books if we like them or if we don't like them. And Sarah, I know that that's one thing I love about your show is that you don't shy away from strong opinions. There are a lot of book podcasts that say, if I don't like a book, I just won't talk about it. And Currently Reading, you're literally going to hear what we're currently reading and what we think about it. Then we usually do a deep dive of some sort, topic. And then, Katie, you want to talk about our last segment, which is, I think, everybody's favorite segment?
It is. It's one of our favorite pieces, and it's the books that we would like to press into readers' hands. And this is like something that we talked about from the very beginning when we were first deciding how our podcast was going to be formatted, talked about how there's a lot of stuff that doesn't get featured because it's so backlist, but it was so good at the time and really shaped us for one reason or another as readers, or it's really great and it's just not getting any play anywhere. So those are the books that we haven't been currently reading. They're not in our deep dives, but they're something that we really think that readers would love. So we're pressing them into our readers' hands. We've got probably close to 100 titles on that list already. Well, 90-ish, but it's a lot of titles and we sell them well because they're books we really love.
And when we have guests on, it's funny, that's the segment they are most nervous about because we're basically asking them, what's the one book you wish you could get everyone to read? And it's always an interesting thing. They're like, it took me forever to come up with it.
And it's the hardest thing in the world to ask a book person to pick the one book.
Although, we're not saying what's your favorite book because then Meredith and I would only have one, right?
Right.
Hypothetically.
And I don't know about you, but I couldn't answer that question anyway. All right. So how did you all come up with your format? I'm so in awe because it's so simple, but it's so perfect.
You know, it's funny because the whole way that the podcast came about, it was so quick. Like from the moment that I had this thought, you know, maybe doing a book podcast would be a whole heck of a lot of fun. I immediately thought about Katie. And even though we weren't super close friends and we weren't friends in real life, we were just friends through different online groups that we were in. I immediately knew that she was who I wanted to be my podcast partner. I had not even heard her voice. And thank the Lord, she's got a gorgeous voice. I really got lucky on that because, man, I don't know why my gut so fully told me if I do this, it's got to be Katie. And then I feel like the name, the format, everything. Katie, once we started working together, it's like we both kind of took the aspects of book podcasts that we liked. We knew there were some things we didn't want that we felt very strongly about. I guess it's that Katie and I felt the same way about what it should and shouldn't be. And so the process was pretty quick coming together.
Yes, exactly.
And Katie, did you have to be convinced to do this?
The timing for me wasn't fantastic, but I was immediately on board. I had a 2-week-old at the time, Sarah. It was ridiculous. But by the time we recorded our first episode, she was only 8 weeks old. We got it together so fast because we were both so excited about it. We wanted to be working on it all the time. We were just thrilled about the idea of getting to talk books together. And it was probably 2 or 3 weeks into that process when Meredith got to hear my voice for the first time on a phone call. So, I mean, it's ridiculous.
Oh my gosh. I was filled with relief. Well, I'll tell you what, I'm going to tell you something that I've actually never, ever said before, but is completely the truth.
Okay.
If Katie had sounded like Kim Kardashian, like with that vocal fry, you know, where everything ends like a question, like that, honestly, it would have been impossible for me. I would have had to extricate myself in some way because there are certain voices. I'm extremely sound sensitive and I'm very voice sensitive.
Sure.
She would have been gracious about it, though.
Yes, I would have definitely been gracious. I wouldn't have been hurtful in any way, but that would have sucked. Oh, Katie, would have been terrible. That you have a beautiful voice.
And it would have sucked for all of us because we wouldn't have gotten currently reading. So you mentioned quickly there were some things you definitely knew you did not want it to be. What were some of those things?
Katie's going to make me go first. I'll tell you one of the things that we feel really, really strongly about. We feel really strongly that there are good descriptions of books, enough that you can figure out whether or not it might be of interest to you, but absolutely no more than that.
Right.
I totally agree.
Yeah. When you have like most of the story told for you already, drives us crazy. And then also, I mean, we already talked about this a little bit with the Books We Press segment, but we don't like podcasts that only talk about the brand newest books because there's so much good stuff in the back catalog. There's 2,000 years of publishing.
And you can get it in paperback. You can get them at the library without a long hold list. And that's what I've heard from my listeners too, that they are thankful that we do make sure to talk about backlist books every single week because even though I don't read a lot of backlist, so it's mostly my guests talking about the backlist books, but because they like to be able to get them at their library, and if they're picking them for a book club, they like to be able to pick something that people can get at the library or that they can don't have to shell out for the hard copy for or the hardcover for.
I think it's great.
So did you ever in a million years expect the reception that Currently Reading has gotten? I feel like it's really taken off quickly. And neither one of you had a blog platform going into it.
Not really. We started our Bookstagram accounts on the same day. And we were like, let's just try it together and see how it goes.
Yeah, no, we didn't have any sort of platform at all. So yes, we said before we dropped the first episode, we said if we can get 10 listeners who every week listen and really love what we're doing, we will be really, really happy. And so given that, we've been extremely blown away by the response and by just the week over week growth. And we've really appreciated how our listeners have done so much. And Sarah, I'm sure you've experienced this too. It's really when the listeners share it out to their other bookish friends, that's really where you're going to gain the traction. And so our fans have just been so gracious and generous with how much they've done that for us. And that really, I mean, we say that at the end of every show, but man, that has made our audience for us. For me, for sure, it's the number one feeling both in my real life and then the podcast has just opened that up so much more is when someone actually reads one of the books that we've talked about and they finish it and they post about it and just say, I am so glad this book came into my life. To me, that is the entire ballgame.
Totally.
I agree. So has y'all's relationship changed at all since you started the podcast?
Yeah.
No, we like occasionally messaged each other on Facebook Messenger about random book talk, like bad store social media and how people need to get their Bookstagram together or whatever. Now it's like everything. Like Meredith is everything to me. She's that friend now that I tell everything to.
Right. We're pretty much in constant contact. I mean, she went from being someone who I knew a little bit to an extremely important part of my life.
And you can tell from your dynamic on the show, I feel like.
Oh, that's nice.
So that was one of our other podcast pet peeves, is we try to keep it really like focused in on book talk and not go off to, hey, you told me about this other thing in your life this week. So we really like hone in a lot in our podcast.
Yep. Keep it to the books. We've talked about the things you love coming out of this podcast. What has been the hardest part about doing this for you all?
I've got one. Recording is my favorite. I love it. It's the best. For me, the hardest part is because our Facebook Messenger chat is this like constant conversation that doesn't ever stop. Sometimes we'll mention little projects or little ideas or whatever, and then they just get buried in the thread because they're all the way back there.
Right.
So keeping track of those things and making sure there's no balls that get dropped for me is the thing that I'm like, okay, I got to put that on a to-do list somewhere so that it doesn't get spaced later on. What about you, Meredith?
Right. And Katie, you do a really, really good job with that. You really carry, you do the heavy lifting as far as that's concerned, which I'm incredibly grateful for. I think the hardest part for me, and this is in no way a complaint, but I think it's more that it has made clear to me that, so Katie reads way more than I do, just in her normal real life. I mean, she'll read.
I think she probably reads more than most people.
Right. She'll read 5 to 8 books in a week.
So she has a lot to share every week, and you don't have
exactly
to worry about
and
that.
And for me, I average, 70 to 80 books a year. What I really realize is that my reading is very, just because of my life and my job, I have periods of time where I just don't have as much time to read. And then I'll have other weeks where it's very easy for me to finish 3 or 4 books.
Sure.
So one thing that the podcast has thrown light on is the inconsistency of my reading. And then also I feel like I need to read more than ever, which of course I love, but balancing all the pieces, because I have a big, big job and then I have my family. And
yeah.
And so it's balancing all those pieces has been challenging, but I don't at all want that to sound like a complaint, because I would never complain about needing to prioritize reading in my life.
Absolutely. I feel that pressure as well. Me more for the blog than the podcast, because that's where I talk more about my own reading in a structured fashion.
Do you feel like you have a certain number of books a week that you need to read?
Not per week, no. I'm more Meredith on your level with reading. Last year I read, I think, 96 books.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm not reading 200 books a year. I'm reading 1 to 2 books a week, depending on how the week goes, how short or long the books are, whether mm-hmm. I finish an audiobook or not. And I feel like I have pressure more like books per month, because I do a monthly blog post where it says, for example, March 2019 books to read and skip. And so I do a little rundown, everything I've read that month that you should read and everything I've read that month that you should maybe skip. And I do feel that pressure. I do feel more pressure as far as the balance between reading new mm-hmm, releases right. and mm-hmm. reading backlist. I really don't read a lot of backlist throughout the year. I mostly read backlist in the month of December, during which I read all backlist.
Right. That's interesting. Right. No, I have noticed with the format of your blog that, yeah, you need to be reading ahead in order to make sure the rest of us know
yeah.
what we should be reading. And so Katie reads more ARCs and kind of is reading ahead more, which is fantastic, because I just like a book that's had some time to marinate and I can, really get a sense of it before I pick it up, just because I don't have as many slots in my reading.
Yeah.
I think that's another way that we're a good pairing. And you know what's funny, as far as the number of books that we read a year, and then as that has to do with the podcast, Katie actually was the one who pointed out to me, I think I was saying something about, how, it's going to be a push for me to have the 3 new books read this week. And Katie was like, Meredith, I was thinking, been reading 3 books a week for many weeks in a row now. And that's 150 books a year pace.
Yes.
Katie was the one who said, you're reading way beyond your normal pace. I hadn't done that math. And she was the one who had to look at that and say, you may be pushing your reading too hard, because this is more than what you normally do. And she's that other perspective that so often is just really helpful. She'll just see something very clearly that I'm not seeing.
That's such a great dynamic to have. And I've got a couple other bloggers that we have sort of a behind the scenes relationship, that they sort of serve a little bit of that role for me as well.
Yeah, it's really important.
So do you all ever get nervous when interviewing a guest? Now that I am asking you this question, your episode with Laura Tremaine just aired. So for the listeners out there, we're recording this episode right after their episode with Laura Tremaine aired. Mm-hmm. So I think you were slightly nervous to record that one, if I've read that correctly.
We were really, really excited. I feel like we had nerves for our first episode where you can hear it in our voices that we're like, oh my gosh, this is so exciting. I can't even handle
it. Totally.
But after that, it's been more like tone down your fangirl and still treat this person like a regular person. They're not the ruler of the free world. They're just a person that you're excited to talk to.
So in the run up, yeah, I think we were super excited to talk to Laura. We're both big fangirls of hers. But once, as so often happens, once you start talking about books, everybody just slots into their normal. Right. You know what I mean? It absolutely flows. And yep. Laura herself is as delightful as you would hope that she is.
Yep.
For what a big podcaster she is and what a big sort of online presence she has, she just could not be any nicer. And she made us feel, you know, super comfortable. And so then the book talk just flowed.
I love hearing that when the people that you have a certain view of from afar turn out to be that thing in real life.
For sure. She's a real deal.
Okay. So now that you've had one of your dream guests on, who is your new dream guest?
We were actually talking about this week now that we've had Laura on.
I have a big crush on Jamie Golden from the podcast.
Oh my gosh. I love Jamie.
Oh,
too.
Yes. She's so great. Or they both are.
They both are. Exactly. They both are. I love their show. Whenever I'm in a bad mood, a cranky mood, the podcast is what I turn on. Jamie Golden, she's a big reader. She loves to talk books. So for me, that's my next dream guest. So just putting it out there in the universe.
If only she were listening.
I know.
We start tagging her on stuff. Paging Jamie Golden. We are both big Gretchen Rubin fangirls. And that is way above and beyond just anything I could imagine. Meredith has been on What Should I Read Next, but I'm still a fangirl from afar for Anne Bogle, so I would love to talk to her.
Oh, so you went on Meredith alone. Was this before or after a Currently Reading came out?
So this was a long time ago. I actually was on episode 11 of What Should I Read Next.
That was way before I ever started listening to it.
And that's another person who is as nice as you could possibly want her to be. She'd be a dream guest too.
Those people are on my list as well. I got another one though. Reese Witherspoon.
Oh my gosh. You're going like into the stratosphere. Wow.
Why not shoot for the stars, right? I'm not thinking about people I could actually get. I'm thinking about who would I want to get if anything was possible.
Now, if only I could come up with a reason for us to ask Dwayne The Rock Johnson to come on.
Heck yeah. In person.
So before we get into your book recommendations, we're going to play a little newlywed game. I want each one of you to tell me your biggest similarity and difference between your two reading tastes. I want to see if your answers match up. Katie, why don't you start?
I think the place that Meredith and I overlap the most is really great middle grade and really great thrillers.
Mm-hmm. Awesome.
If she loves something in one of those two genres, I'm going to pick it up. And if I tell her this was really great, she's going to go get it right away.
That was going to be my answer to that question, too. We have a lot of overlap to our taste.
Okay, biggest difference.
So differences, I think Katie likes a lot more sort of social justice reads than I do.
Uh-huh.
She'll read for learning a little bit more. I read for escape and she'll read, you know, a little bit more for learning. And then she also likes books with really big feelings. She's okay with
crying
at the end of a book.
So you dig A Little Life.
I did read A Little Life and I really, really liked it. But it like slaughtered me. I was laying on the floor bawling.
Yeah.
That statement that Katie just made, for some people, they're like, put it on my TBR. And for me, I'm like, run the opposite direction. I have zero desire to be laid low by a book.
Fair enough.
I would say those are our biggest differences.
I wrote down that our biggest difference is that I will read more memoir than Meredith, which I feel like also plays into that social justice, nonfiction, learning. And then she hates World War II historical fiction. And I'm like, give it all to me. I want all of it.
I do.
I don't love World War II historical fiction either, although I did love We Were the Lucky Ones. That was my big exception.
That one, it deserves to be an exception.
Well, and then I like business books. I like business biographies.
Yep.
Which Katie wouldn't read.
No.
And I do like that stuff too. All right, let's go into your book recommendations. And we're going to do this a little bit differently today for everybody since we have two guests on. So today, Katie and Meredith each will recommend one old book they love, one new book they love, one book they didn't love, and one new release they're excited about. So you will get one book from each of them in each category. Katie, why don't you go first with your first old book you love?
When I was thinking about this, I thought back to some of our very first episodes and the ones that I couldn't wait for that very first books to press into our listeners' hands segment. And on episode 2, I pressed 11/22/63 by Stephen King. And I just have to say that this book surprised me so much. I was just blown away. When somebody describes a weird portal that takes this dude back in time, written by Stephen King, the master of horror, I was like, why would I like this book? This sounds terrible. I loved every minute.
Wait, when I was prepping for this episode, I read the synopsis again, and I was like, this just sounds preposterous. And I loved the book, too.
Totally. And it's ridiculously long. So I did this one on audio. It's 37 hours, you guys. It is ridiculous.
Uh-huh.
And I wasn't listening at...
Which equates to about 900 pages.
Well, it's 800-ish pages. I just looked that up the other day. But I was not listening at 2x at that time either. I was at like 1.3 maybe. So it almost... I mean, it took me like 30 hours at least to listen to it. So, man, that was a long time commitment and a book I truly ended up loving, which shocked me.
It's a really good book.
I don't love horror, and this is really the only Stephen King book that I have adored.
Yeah, me too.
I feel like that's similar for me too.
Because it's not quite horror. And I love the premise of what could life have looked like had JFK not been assassinated.
Right. It was so, so interesting. So compelling. I loved it.
And for the listeners out there, if y'all have a thing about time travel books, like if you don't think you would ever like them or think that the whole concept sounds cheesy, which I do, I'm one of those people, this is one you might enjoy anyway.
Yes,
agreed.
So if you have a reading challenge category that has time travel in it, but don't want to actually read something about time travel, you might like this one, if you can stand 800 pages. So that was 11/22/63 by Stephen King. And Meredith, what is your old book you love?
I want to talk about a book called All Things Cease to Appear by Elizabeth Brundage. This is a mystery. This is a sort of creepy, spooky, a little bit ghosty mystery that did not get the buzz that I think it really, really deserves. So the setup is basically it's in upstate New York. Father comes home at the end of his workday to the farmhouse where he lives with his wife and 3-year-old daughter. And finds the wife has been murdered by an axe and the little girl is playing just like in the next room. It's a very tough setup, but that's kind of as gory as it gets. The rest of it is just really an unpeeling of an onion solving this mystery. And like I said, there's creepy elements, there's spooky elements, there's ghosty elements. It's what I would describe as a literary mystery. It's very, very well written. It's very smart, but the plot moves along really well. You have enough where you can play along in the mystery. And it's not one of these really, I'm just so tired of this trope of the, you know, the thriller with the one big twist that you never would have guessed because
it's outrageous.
Right? Like you couldn't even play along with it.
Right.
This book is the opposite of that. This book is one of those that just is extremely well done. So if you love an evocative mystery that's just going to pull you in from the very beginning, I would highly recommend All Things Cease to Appear by Elizabeth Brundage.
And this has been on my TBR for years. And you've just bumped it a lot higher because I love a good literary mystery.
It's very smart.
And what you said about the twist, that is how I feel about mysteries and thrillers and why so many of them don't work for me. And this sounds like it's not that.
It's not that. I wouldn't describe it as a thriller. So I want to be really, really clear. It's not a psychological thriller.
Right.
It is a really strong, well-written mystery that is written for smart people.
I did pick it up after Meredith talked about it on our podcast and listened to it on audio, but it was before we decided that we would talk about books twice if we both read them. So I picked it up on audio and I tore through it. I thought it was so well done, very well crafted. I totally agree with this. I think you should put it on your TBR, Sarah, and I think your listeners should too.
Awesome. It's on my TBR. It's just lower down. All right. So that was All Things Cease to Appear by Elizabeth Brundage. And Katie, tell us about your new book you love.
The new book that I love that I just recently read, it just released this month. It's called The Editor by Stephen Rowley. This is the author of Lily and the Octopus. which I loved, even though there's a weird section that I didn't love. Overall, I thought it was a great book. Although that one definitely needs tissues. The editor is way more fun. It is about a young debut author. He's trying to get his novel published. He gets sent off to meet an editor who's potentially going to acquire his book, and it turns out to be Jackie O. This is the first chapter. That's not a spoiler. She is graceful and beautiful and amazing, and she deploys alcohol as a regular weapon in her like conversations with him. Everything about it, I loved. It made me want to like pour myself a drink and just sit down and spend a lot of time with it. And the way that it's written, there were parts that made me laugh out loud, funny, like David Sedaris, and then parts that really got to the heart of the mother-son relationship. I thought it was really, really well-crafted. A great sophomore novel.
I loved this one too. And I just finished it recently as well. And I feel like if the premise of this book could have been totally preposterous, Jackie O is your editor. But, you know, she was an editor. And you think about it, and there were probably a number of authors that had a similar experience. I mean, how do you work with an editor when it's Jackie Onassis?
Totally. And you can tell how much research he put into her life as an editor and her life post-widowhood because of the way that he pulls out quotes and little things that he knows about her and slyly inserts them into the story.
He did such a good job balancing the star power of Jackie O.
Yeah, totally.
But not overkilling it. There is a lot of substance to this story that's not related to the Jackie O part.
Yeah.
Have you read this, Meredith?
I have not read it, but I did just read Lily and the Octopus. He is really funny. He does remind me of David Sedaris in his ability to really make you laugh out loud.
Yeah, and I have not read Lily and the Octopus, and I kind of want to go back and read that one now.
Yes, you should.
So that was The Editor by Stephen Rowley, and it just came out at the beginning of the month. Meredith, tell us about your new book you love.
The book I want to talk about is the 5-star book early in the episode that I mentioned. I read The Current by Tim Johnston. This is another book that falls into the category of literary mystery, which is so deeply in my wheelhouse. I, as we talked about, these popcorn thrillers that have been coming out just do not scratch this itch for me. It feels like it's all that's being published these days.
The struggle is real. I hear you.
Mm-hmm. Yes. So The Current is extremely refreshing if you've been sick of that kind of book, because The Current is an absolutely amazing premise right from the start as far as it really, really gets going. Basically, we're in Minnesota in the winter. We've got two college girls who are traveling home to one of their family's homes, and they get into an accident and their car begins to spin out, and then they sort of come to a stop right at the edge of the road, which is right on the edge of a very steep bank into a river. And so they can sort of see how close they came to the edge. And again, this is no spoilers. This is like jacket copy. They basically have that moment where they look at each other and they're like, oh my God, just relief coursing through them, right? Because they came so close to the edge. And then a car pulls up behind them and they're like, oh, okay, someone saw what just happened and is, you know, going to make sure that we're okay. And so they see these lights, you know, the headlights of the car behind them. And then slowly the headlights get closer and closer and closer to the back of their car. And they're like, this is weird. Maybe they think we need a tow or something. Until all of a sudden they disappear and they start to feel their car moving forward. And they get pushed down into the icy river. And one of them does not survive. What's interesting, though, is that 10 years previously, a very similar kind of thing happened. So the book goes back and forth between a couple different timelines. There's multiple characters that are so incredibly well drawn. Tim Johnston is a genius. And what I said when we recorded our show and I talked about this, because I felt it so fully, I would go with him anywhere. He's such a masterful writer that I just felt like whatever he wrote, I would read and I would feel very sure it was going to be good. So that's The Current by Tim Johnston.
And did you read his first book, The Descent?
I haven't, but just this weekend, like the moment I finished The Current, I picked it up. So it's slotted in real soon.
I would love to hear what you think of it, because I tried The Descent and ended up putting it down. But everything that everybody has told me about, A, The Descent and The Current leads me to think that I would love this author. So I feel like I should give it another try.
Right. And I will say that The Current, you need to give it 50 or so pages to get your feet under you.
Okay.
This is a book that I would say it's extraordinarily good, but it demands something of the reader.
Yep.
It demanded that I slow down. And you can't just skim for dialogue in this book. This book is so smart that he's basically saying, no, you're going to sit here and you're going to read this book properly. And that, to me, I just felt such respect for him to be so sure of his craft
yep.
that he would write in that way.
All right. So that was The Current by Tim Johnston. And also for the listeners, if you remember or if you were listening back during episode 2, during our winter book preview, Catherine Gilmore from The Gilmore Guide to Books actually shared this book as one she was looking forward to, but she had not yet read it. So now we can circle back and close the loop on that one for you.
And can I say, I would love to give just one more recommendation
yes.
for a book that came out last year. But if you are looking for a smart mystery, but does lend itself to being read by the pool, can I just recommend The Perfect Couple by Elin Hildebrand? Because to me, that falls into that category of it's a great mystery. It moves right along. If it's kind of like if you liked Big Little Lies, you'd probably like this book, but it doesn't require that sharp level of attention. But it's still more than just a popcorn thriller. So I just want to put that out there if people are looking for that this summer.
Right. Yep. Hi. I don't think anyone will be mad for a bonus book recommendation.
Okay, good.
So let's turn the corner, talk about some books we don't love. That might be all three of our favorite things, actually. I don't know what that says about us, but...
Spicy take. We're for it.
Oh, you know I am too. Katie.
All right. I am so excited to pan a book.
Especially one that is so popular, which is my very favorite type of book to pan.
This is a very popular book. So mine is Everything I Never Told You by Celeste Ng. And I hated this book.
And I love that Katie will actually use the word hate it. That's one of my favorite things about her is that she's not going to skirt around with this whole,
yep.
It was a book that was not for me. No, she hated this book.
No, I wanted to throw this book. I was so mad. So like right at the beginning, it's like Lydia is dead. That's the first line. She's a 16-year-old daughter of this family. She is a great swimmer, but she's found drowned in the lake. The whole entire book, I just wanted to like bash these people's heads together and be like, why don't you flipping talk to each other and figure out your ish. Like, I cannot with these people who were like, we don't know what happened. This is so weird. She was so happy all the time. And then they never talked to each other or they were never honest with each other. And I realized sometimes that's a family dynamic, but then to act like this is a genuine mystery, like what is happening here? This family fell apart and they were so great. It just made me so mad. But I don't hate Celeste Ng because I picked up Little Fires Everywhere, even though I hated this book, and I loved every page. So there you go.
Wait, how did you decide to pick up Little Fires Everywhere, having hated...
It was serious peer pressure. And I had few other people in my life, very few, because most people love this book, that said, I also hated this book, but it was like 3 of 100 or whatever.
Right.
And I loved Little Fires Everywhere. And I don't know who talked them into it, but they were like, still give it a try. It's a very different setup. It's a very different feel. Just see how it goes. And I ended up loving it. So I'm glad I listened to my like trusted book friends on that one. But man, Everything I Never Told You. Every time somebody's like, tell me about a book I hated, I'm like, oh, I have a story for you.
That's your number one. I have a go-to book for that as well. But I felt like with this book, especially given the first line and maybe the way they marketed it as being more of a mystery than it was. And I felt right. like it ended up being more of a quieter, dysfunctional family story.
Right.
And with this extra suspense plotline thrown in, but they led with the suspense plotline.
Mm-hmm.
And so once I settled into the book and understood that this was not going to be a page turner and it wasn't about Lydia and how she died, it was more like about the family dynamics and Lydia was the star and what does that do to the other two kids in the family and the pressure coming from the parents and the fact that the mom was a stay-at-home mom and she felt like she'd given up her career and really had a lot of resentment about that. Once I settled into that, I really liked the book. I think marketing can really throw wrenches in things sometimes.
Expectations make a really, really big difference.
Totally.
I just couldn't. I finished it and then I wanted to throw it across the room.
Well, I looked back at the Goodreads ratings for this one right before we recorded, and it's not even 4 stars. It's like 3.5, which I feel like for a Goodreads rating, average rating is low.
That's because of my 1 star.
Yes. Well, no, clearly other people agree with you.
Yeah, I guess there have to be other ones.
Totally. All right. So that was Everything I Ever Told You by Celeste Ng, but a positive plug for Little Fires Everywhere by Celeste Ng. All right, Meredith, what is your book you hated?
There are definitely books that I would say hate. I really did not like My Sister, the Serial Killer by Oyin Khan Braithwaite. And I feel like this book is one of those books that just was everywhere on Instagram.
Yep.
And I picked it up. Now, it's a very short book. My problem with this book is one that is very often my problem with a book that I will end up not liking at all, which is that I really not only did not like, I mean, I felt extremely negatively toward every single character. And that for me, when there are characters that I just don't like, when there's nobody I can kind of grab onto and you know, really root for, to me, the book is going to be a lost cause. So that was my issue here, was that I just from the very beginning, from the premise, I was like, yeah, no.
Well, I mean, she is off killing her boyfriend. So yes.
Exactly. And then the sister covering for her all the time. That was maybe even more infuriating to me than the beautiful sister who inexplicably needed to kill her boyfriends, which also why? And so anyway, just the whole book was a mess for me. But a lot of people really loved it.
Yeah.
On our Instagram post about this book, people would be like, but what about Coma Guy? Didn't you like Coma Guy?
Yeah, but what does it say about a book when the only character that you like is in a coma?
Yeah. So, Katie, did you read this one too?
I did read it. I thought it was fun and funny. I mean, I didn't like any of the characters. I thought the plot was fun enough and funny enough that I didn't hate it.
I liked it too. And I, Meredith, don't feel that way about books where I don't feel like I have to have a character that I like in order to like the book. But again, I know that a lot of people do feel that way. And I read it in ARC form before it came out and before the hype really got moving. And I was sort of like, this title is amazing. I'm going to try to read it. Susie from the blog Novel Visits, she liked it and I trust her. And so I picked it up on a whim almost. And I was like, oh, this is really kind of hilarious. And why am I finding this girl that murders her boyfriends funny at all? I don't know, but it's strange and I kind of like it. And it was just sort of a nice little surprise.
Right.
That makes sense.
Yes. To that point, it is different.
I always try to come up with read-alikes for my reviews and I couldn't for this one.
I was going to say that would be difficult.
And I find it interesting that I usually love y'all's book recommendations and agree with your picks. And today, these two, your two that you hated, I did like both of them.
Awesome.
That was My Sister, the Serial Killer by, I'm going to try this, Oyin Khan Braithwaite.
Yep.
Let's move on to upcoming releases you're excited about. Katie, tell us about yours.
My upcoming release that I'm excited about but haven't read yet is Waiting for Tom Hanks by Carrie Winfrey. It comes out June 11th of 2019, and I do have the ARC, but I haven't gotten to it yet because I don't want to read it too far out. So I'm excited. I know that Annie Jones from The Bookshelf has already posted about it and she really liked it. So that's usually a really good cosign for me. So just the premise. I started the first page and then I was like, oh, I should really wait on this. And even that first page, I was like, oh, this is going to be perfect summertime reading. I'm so excited.
Katie, did you say why it is that you force yourself to wait?
Well,
on a book like that?
Mostly because for our listeners on our podcast, I don't want to talk to them about a book that I read like I did to them with Things We Save in a Fire, where I'm like, hi, guys, it's January and I just read a book that comes out in August and I'm so excited to tell you about it. And I didn't realize it comes out in August till right this minute.
Right.
So if I read a book in April that doesn't come out till June, I don't want to be like, guess what? You can't get your hands on this for 2 months, but you should later. Whereas it's more helpful to say, okay, coming up in just a couple weeks, put your library hold in now or pre-order your Amazon book now. I feel like that's more helpful.
Yeah.
And I don't want to have read it so far back that I can't summarize it well either, is the other part of that.
It's funny, Ashley Spivey, when I had her on a couple episodes ago, actually more than a couple, but she said the same thing. When she reads too far in advance, she will post something on Instagram and then there's no one to talk about it with. Nobody cares. And she's realized that she doesn't like reading super far in advance because of that. I probably read about 1 month out.
I feel like that's a good timeline. Although being on launch teams, I have found that, or like statistically, people do their most pre-ordering in the 1 week leading up to launch.
Oh,
so
interesting.
Getting books in their faces that are coming out within that next week is actually the most helpful to the authors.
That's good to know. Oh, did we talk about what that's about, Waiting for Tom Hanks?
Not really. I mean, the main character is a older 29-ish, I think, and she feels like she's watched so many romantic comedies and read so many romantic comedies that she should have met her quote-unquote Tom Hanks by now, the guy that Tom Hanks plays in all these movies. Right on the first page, she talks about You've Got Mail and Sleepless in Seattle, and then she even goes further back to When Harry Met Sally, and Nora Ephron is my spirit animal for movies. I just love her. So to pull all my favorite things into one page like that, I'm super excited about it. I think it's going to be just a really fun, lighthearted, perfect beach read. And I hope that it's kind of a romance where there's a happy ending and hopefully not too open door, like just a sweet story.
So that was Waiting for Tom Hanks by Carrie Winfrey, coming out June 11th. And Meredith, what is your upcoming release you're excited about?
Well, there is no new release, and this one actually does come out in a few months, but there's no new release that I'm more excited about than the new installment of the Louise Penny Armand Gamache Three Pine series called A Better Man, and that releases on August 27th. But I am the biggest Louise Penny fan, and I just feel like for well-written mysteries, there is just nobody who's doing it better. And so every time her books come out, I usually take a couple days off work.
Ooh.
I try to go someplace, and my husband and I will go to Half Moon Bay, and I'll literally call it a reading vacation. And then that's my number one activity, is reading the new book, because I just can't wait when they come out. So yeah, that's A Better Man by Louise Penny. I purposely have not even read the blurb about exactly what it's going to be about. Like, I always try to know as little as possible. I know it's got a great new cover. I'm happy she's back to her late August releases. With the last year, it was like late November that we got the book. So the series, of course, starts with a still life, and it must be read in order. You cannot just jump in. But I highly recommend the entire series, and I am waiting for that new one with bated breath.
And does she generally publish a new one every year?
She does, yes.
That's amazing.
It is, especially with how high quality they are.
My mom is obsessed with this series, and she's read them all, and I texted her when I got your books, because I didn't know Louise Penny had a new one coming out. I texted my mom to tell her. So thank you for that.
Absolutely.
For the listeners, if y'all are not familiar with Louise Penny, she writes these mysteries that are set in Canada. Small town, quirky characters.
Yes, quirky characters. Each book has a standalone mystery in it, but then there also are other pieces about the characters and their lives together that are kind of overarching, that kind of move from book to book, which is the reason that it must be read in order, because literally if you jumped in at book six,
right,
very little would make sense to you.
Especially book six.
Exactly. But it's really smart.
When we get close enough, Meredith will start a like daily countdown as well for release date.
All right. We're going to finish up like we always do by playing Rate It. And this is a lightning round game where I throw out five bookish things, and it could be anything book related. And sometimes I stretch the definition of book related. And you rate it either one or five stars, just like how you'd rate a book, but no two, three, or four stars. Just to make it difficult.
I love it.
All right. So number one, Katie, we'll do you first. Recording when one of you can't be there.
Ooh, I'm going to go one. I've loved our guests, but Meredith and I's chemistry is so great. I have to go with one.
I hear you. Meredith?
Yeah, I would have to go with one. Again, we've had great guests, and I do think that it's good for the podcast for us to have multiple voices, but I think that when it's easiest is with Katie.
That makes sense.
So I would have to go one.
Now you're making me really want to co-host. All right, number two. I know how you're going to answer this, but I'm going to say it anyway. Internet book people, meaning bloggers, podcasters, Instagrammers, who, as a rule, don't talk about books they don't like on their platforms.
One.
One here, too.
Boo.
When I first started my blog, this was the thing that shocked me the most. I had no idea that that was a thing, that people only talked about books they liked. This literally blew my mind.
So frustrating.
I know. I was like, why would you not?
Part of what frustrates me about that is that there are a lot of people who will put a book on their Bookstagram, you know, like a photo of the book, and then the caption will tell you that they haven't read it yet.
Yes.
Which is fine. Okay. You know, they're in the midst of reading it, whatever. I have no problem with that. But the net effect of doing that, if you never follow up with your actual opinion, if you didn't like it, is that's, I think, part of how bad books get traction.
Yep.
Because lots of people will post, oh, can't wait to start this one. And then tons of people don't want to actually follow up with it with a negative review. So that's why I would give that a one.
Or if you're not willing to go on Amazon or Goodreads and give a poor review, then the ratings are unnecessarily skewed high because nobody's giving those lower stars.
I totally agree. And let me just go on a tangent for 1 second about the ratings and skewing them. I'm always at a dilemma because I DNF so many books. I rarely finish a book I don't like. So then on Goodreads, what do I do about a rating? I don't want to not rate it because I read 40% of it and didn't like it and dropped it. And if everyone behaves that way, then the ratings are going to be skewed unfairly high, right? But then also, I didn't finish the book. Am I allowed to rate it? I don't know.
I don't rate books on Goodreads that I haven't finished.
Yep.
But I will put them on my abandoned shelf and put a comment in my review that says, I could not get through this because I was not enjoying myself at all. So I'm not saying the plot is horrible, the characters are horrible, but there's still a record out there that I didn't like it.
That's exactly what I do. And I do share my DNFs on my blog as well. But I do feel like Goodreads needs to numerically have a better option for this. Like a checkbox that you can check that says DNF, and that somehow feeds into their algorithm and gets factored into the average rating. So you all were both a one on that one, not surprisingly. Okay, number three. A guest sharing a book you did not like as the book that he or she wanted to press into everyone's hands.
Oh, man.
Both of our eyes got so big.
I would have to say one, we've been really lucky that that hadn't happened because we do have a special page on our website where we put these particular, like we actually break out
right.
These particular books. We have a books to press page.
And I'll link to that in the show notes for everybody.
Right. And we take that page really, really seriously. So I don't know, Katie, I'm going to give it a one.
I agree. It hasn't happened yet. There are some that I haven't read yet, obviously. So it's possible right. That later I could end up hating that something that is on that page. I do like guests sharing books that they loved that we hated.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But I also like the sanctity of that page is very important to us. So
let me ask you this question. If it happened in the future, do you vet those books before your guest says them?
Nope.
Okay, so what I'm about to ask can't apply then. I was going to say, would you ever tell a guest, hey, we really didn't like, or one of us really didn't like this book. You can't use it to press into everyone's hands.
We don't vet at all. We don't ask them for their current reads. We don't ask them for their press. We don't ask for, and it's really only because we want to be able to respond in real time.
Absolutely.
As authentically as possible. So we would have to really talk about it. If someone pressed a book that we felt really strongly against, you know, we would put it certainly on the show, but would we put it on that page? We would have to talk. Talk about that.
Interesting. This is what I like to happen when we play this game.
That's a good question.
Glad I thought of one good one at least. All right, number four. This is kind of has an A and B parts. Podcast editing. Part A, do you love or hate the actual act of doing it? And part B, do you believe in lots of editing or not?
I'll take this one just because I'm the one who does the editing. So five for me, I love editing the show. I love the actual act of doing it. We were talking a little bit before we went on the air is that we edit very lightly, especially when it's Katie and I, just because we don't edit out flubs. You know, for the most part, we just let it roll. We're very much what you see is what you get. But so there's not a lot of actual editing, but every once in a while, it is really nice to be able to have there be something that happens that you can clean up and make really nice and tidy. And that sort of appeals to the, you know, the Penelope part of my personality, the type A part of my personality. So yes, five to editing, and then we edit really lightly.
Awesome. All right, number five. I know how you're going to answer this too. Meeting internet bookish friends for the first time in person.
5 million.
Five.
Yeah, it went so well for y'all. I loved seeing that.
That was one of my favorite days of this year.
And that was fun as a listener to see you all do that and see you talk about it on social media. All right, before we go, why don't you tell everyone where they can find you and your podcast online?
So you can find me on Instagram. I'm at meredith.reads.
And I'm at Notes on Bookmarks on Instagram. And the podcast is at Currently Reading Podcast on Instagram.
And y'all, if you like this podcast, which I assume you do since you're listening, you will really like Currently Reading. So if you're not already a Currently Reading listener, I suggest you go check it out immediately and your TBR will explode even more.
We do feel like there's a lot of overlap between your format and your style and our format and our style, and that our listeners would all get along really well.
And especially given we both are not afraid to talk about things we don't like. Well, thank you all both for coming on. This has been so much fun to talk to you.
Thank you, Sarah.
Thank you. This has been really, really fun. Thank you so much.
Next week, I've got Rachel and Jacqueline, also known as the Pingle Sisters, from their blog of the same name, joining me. Talk to you next week.
Thanks so much for listening to Sarah's Bookshelves Live. You can find show notes with all the books mentioned in the episode, purchase links, and linked timestamps at sarahsbookshelves.com/podcast. And that's Sarah with an H. I'd love to hear your comments, feedback, and suggestions, especially since we're just starting out. Find me online on my blog, sarahsbookshelves.com, on Twitter at Sarah's Shelves, on Instagram at Sarah's Bookshelves, and via email at sarahsbookshelves@gmail.com. Happy reading!